And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are recapping the Maui Invitational, talking about Kansas basketball. We will have an episode kind of wrapping up the KU football season and talking at least briefly about that Baylor game. But through a combination of me being sick right after that game and not actually related to the game, but also just how much of a blowout that game was, I think we can take a little bit of time and look back on the season as a whole. So instead, we are going to focus on basketball. And to help me do that, of course, we have our usual basketball co-host in Steve Fetch, the basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Fetch, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. You know, you kind of stole my opening line. I was going to say that that football game made me sick as well, but happy to be talking basketball instead of that sport.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I actually came down with a pretty bad cold over the Thanksgiving weekend, and which kind of delayed everything that I was doing. I had some other appearances on other podcasts that were already scheduled long before that. And so I drained myself doing other stuff, apparently. But obviously, we haven't talked about Maui yet, so this is the perfect opportunity to go ahead and do that. Kansas won both of the games that we expected to be competitive. I'm not going to, you know, we talked beforehand that the Chaminade game itself probably wasn't going to be much to talk about. And I think we kind of figured that out pretty quickly, that there really wasn't a whole lot to take away from that game. So the two games to really talk about were BYU and Dayton. Of course, the Dayton game being a complete surprise, because that was the one team that neither of us saw coming out of the top half of that bracket there. So I'm going to let you pick what we talk about first. Do you want to talk about the BYU game, or do you want to talk about the fact that Dayton actually came out of that top half of the bracket?
Well, yeah, I suppose we can take them kind of in order here, and we can talk about BYU first and then talk about Dayton when we get to that game.
Sounds good.
You're right. Kind of a competitive game against BYU. You know, they were kind of in it for quite a while. You know, halftime, Kansas was up by, what, 2 points, I think it was. So, you know,
right,
really competitive. And then Kansas kind of came out in those first 10 minutes of the second half and just kind of had a little bit of a separation there. Really impressed with the way BYU, maybe not the way they played, but just kind of their game plan, kind of doing what you thought they would need to do. Obviously, with Kansas's interior defense being what it is, BYU shot 33 three-pointers compared to just 21 twos, which I thought was pretty funny. And, you know, when you got, not to put it this way, when you got a bunch of, you know, white kids, that's probably the plan, you know, shoot as many threes as you can. Actually did a pretty good job scoring inside. They shot like 62% on twos, and if they would have shot a little bit better from three, maybe they would have had a chance at the upset. But as it was, they turned it over way too often, and Kansas was pretty cold from outside as well. And if they had maybe a little bit more of a normal day, they probably would have beat BYU by even more. So probably a fair result, maybe a little bit more flattering to both defenses than it should have been. But all in all, a pretty fair result and a pretty, routine-ish win for Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, it was honestly, I think, what we kind of expected, that Kansas was struggling a little bit from the three-point line. They only shot 4 of 18 for 22%. But to be honest, there was big stretches of that game where they just weren't really looking to shoot threes. And I think that really affected the rhythm. And I think that's the biggest issue that I have with this team so far, is that, yes, inside is working so well, but it's almost to the point now where they're neglecting trying to get any kind of rhythm shooting threes. And so, you know, they don't in the early part of the game work through any issues that they're having with the three-pointer in that particular game. They go so quickly to the inside that they just never have really gotten to a point where they're getting hot from three at all. And so that might be something that comes back to bite them later, you know, if they run into a team where they need that three-point shooting just to keep up. But on the flip side, I think what worked really well in this game was they played a very good lockdown defensive game. You know, BYU shot 33 three-pointers, only made 9 of them, and a good deal of that, I think, was just how good they were playing perimeter defense. There was quite a few times where BYU, you know, kicked the ball around and it looked like they were going to get an open shot, and all of a sudden a guy closed out of nowhere and really contested those three-pointers. So BYU had the right kind of game plan, try to move the ball around, try to catch people off guard, you know, and be able to take uncontested threes. that seemed to be the way to attack Kansas last year, and this team has really kind of stepped up to work on their defense to be able to rotate around and get to where they need to. And then, like you were talking about with the turnovers, you know, BYU had 20 turnovers. They turned the ball over, if I'm looking at this right, on 28% of their possessions, which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, that's the same level that Kansas was turning them over against Duke. So we saw that kind of defensive performance for Kansas, you know, that we have come to expect from this team. So like you said, this is a very flattering game for both of these defenses. But I'm wondering how much of a problem this is that Kansas is not, you know, seems to be focusing on trying to get the three-pointer going, even, you know, when they are having such a good game on the inside. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Problem with that, well, maybe not a problem, but, you know, with this Kansas team, and this is going to surprise everyone who knows how much I like to talk about three-pointers, but the best, you know, the best offense for Kansas is dumping it into Udoka Azubuike. And so, you know, when they can do that over and over and over and score over and over and over, not that there's not a reason to take threes, because obviously, you know, you still need the spacing and everything like that. But some of that spacing is just natural when you have four guards around Azubuike. And then, you know, you've got Devon Dotson, who I think, you know, even though he's not shooting it very well from behind the arc, I think is going to be a good three-point shooter by the end of the year. But his game is much more going to the basket, and he's such a good foul drawer. And so is Yoke Azubuike. And it's just one of those things where I think Bill Self's kind of playing the long game in terms of game-to-game, where they want to, you know, get other teams' best players, especially if they're, you know, big men. And we'll talk about this a little bit more in the Dayton game, but they want to get, you know, those guys into foul trouble and really impact how much they can play and how that influences how they play when they're in foul trouble. So, I do want them to take more threes. And I've said, you know, I applaud Marcus Garrett for taking those open threes, and he's actually shooting the ball a little bit better. I'd like to see Ochai Agbaji take more three-pointers. I'd like to see, you know, Isaiah Moss take more three-pointers. And even, you know, Tristan Ennerina, take more three-pointers, because, you know, I think those guys can really shoot. And I think, you know, Garrett can shoot a reasonable amount. And when you combine his ball handling and ability to get to the rim, he needs to combine that with a three-point shot. So, yeah, they need to take more threes. But I do think that they can live with taking fewer threes than maybe last year's team or certainly the 2 years before that.
Yeah, I'm wondering where the limit is for that, because, you know, I definitely agree. And I actually made that same argument. I was talking with Sterling Holmes over on the home stretch over on ESPN Kansas City over on Tuesday, and kind of made the same point that, you know, three-pointers, they're not really making them, but that hasn't been so much of a concern yet because of how dominant Duke can be on the inside. But, you know, they only took 18 of their 61 shots as three-pointers in that BYU game, which is absolutely, I mean, that's less than 30% of their shots from three. You know, I think it was even less against Dayton. You know, they only shot 11 of their 59 shots. So that was an even worse percentage against Dayton. And of course, we'll talk more about Dayton here in a minute, but that's less than 19%. So over the course of the tournament, you know, they didn't really take very many threes at all. And it gets to a point where, if you're not taking those threes, you're not going to work out the kinks in your shot. And so, you know, getting those percentages up, if they don't have very many opportunities to work on taking those shots in a game situation, you know, they're not going to, I think, get that kind of stroke that they've had in the NCAA tournament, you know, in previous years. I don't know how much of a problem it is, especially since they are leaning so much on the two-pointers. But, you know, we've talked quite a bit about this team is supposed to be versatile enough to handle a bunch of different looks from a bunch of different types of teams and be able to adapt to that. But if they focus so much on shooting down low, then they haven't really, I think, utilized, you know, stretched all the muscles that they would need to be able to adjust to a team that is going to be able to shoot so well from the three-pointer and keep up with them. I mean, do you have those kind of concerns, or am I kind of overthinking this at this point?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess there's going to come the time where, you know, maybe Udoka Azubuike gets in foul trouble and you can't just dump it into him, or, you know, they're just, whatever, not scoring inside very well. But, you know, when you can shoot 60% from two, I mean, I guess I don't – not that they should be shooting it inside the arc every time. I mean, that's ridiculous, and you're right. They should be, you know, probably taking more threes than they do, just because I think they have some pretty good offensive rebounders too, so you can get some of those back. And if they do – if those turnover issues do crop up again, of course, you know, a very underrated – storyline coming out of Maui is they took care of the ball really well against both BYU and Dayton. So there's maybe less of a need where, you know, they'd be better off jacking up a quick three and maybe taking a little bit worse shot, but not turning the ball over. You know, they don't really seem to have those turnover concerns anymore, fingers crossed. But
yeah, knock on wood.
You know, what's that?
I said, yeah, knock on wood.
Oh yeah, for sure. But I just think that, you know, if they're not going to turn the ball over, you know, trying to force it inside, they're getting good shots. I mean, I guess, you know, the only concern I have more so even than, like you're talking about getting in rhythm and stuff like that, is just putting a bunch of really good, you know, sets to get the ball in the post on film for, you know, when we get into the Sweet 16 and then fingers crossed again, Elite Eight, Final Four, et cetera. You know, maybe that those easy looks start to dry up a little bit, and then you do have to shoot some more threes. So yeah, I mean, I think they should probably, you know, work some more of that into their game. But at the same time, how much can you really prepare for, you know, a guy the size of Vito Kazibuki just dunking it all over you, and a guy as fast as Devon Dotson, you know, getting into the lane and drawing fouls and stuff. So I do wish they would take more threes, but I'm not, I'm probably not to your level upset about it.
Which I think is actually kind of funny, because I think in years past we've been on the opposite, you know, where you think they need to be taking a ton more threes and I've been okay with it. But, you know, I think the other point that needs to kind of be made here is that when Udoka is not out on the court, even if he has foul trouble, David McCormick has been really developing into a similar type of role, playing a similar type of way. He's not as dominant in terms of the dunks, but I think he has a better shot away from the basket. And he is still fairly dominant on the inside there, can do a lot of the similar types of things, just not to the same level that Udoka can. So it's not as big of an issue as in prior years, where it was Udoka was the main big guy that we had inside. And when he was out, you know, there wasn't a whole lot more that we could do, especially like last year when we were without him. You know, Dedrick Lawson was not the same type of big man, and so we weren't able to do the similar sort of things. You know, so we have a little bit more flexibility in that. And we can still kind of rely on that 2-point shooting. But, you know, it's definitely hard to ignore the fact that the game is moving more towards teams that are very efficient from three and find a way to take those shots. So it really becomes a question of how much is too much in relying on that 2-pointer. And of course, we don't know what that answer is. I don't think we'll really know until we get there and all of a sudden we realize, oh, wait a minute, you know, this is the problem. You know, like the only time we're ever going to find out if it's too much is if we get to the NCAA tournament and it turns out to be too much and then we lose the game because of it. So, all right. So talking specifically about this BYU game, were there any particular players that you wanted to highlight here?
Well, I think you mentioned them. You know, we're going to be talking about Dotson and Azubuki in the next one. Both of them played well, but let's talk a little David McCormick. You know, he was the KenPom MVP of that one. Played just 20 minutes, but, you know, 16 points, 5 rebounds, which is nice. 1 turnover, which, you know, I think a guy like him, that's plenty reasonable. 5 rebounds, you know, made both of his free throws. Free throw stroke, I think, you know, is one thing that maybe we should talk about later. I mean, his free throw looks pretty good. You know, Kazibuki is, I think, maybe going to improve in that as well, but you know, end of the game scenario. I mean, you don't want to take Azubuki off the floor, but like, I definitely don't think McCormick would be the worst guy to have at the line. Maybe not the guy you'd prefer, but you know, it's certainly a huge boost when you have a big man who can go to the line and knock those shots out when he gets fouled. So still needs to improve defensively. I don't like him at the four. I don't really like him in there with Azubuki, but I do think he can be an effective player at the five when Azubuki's on the bench, and Kansas obviously going to take a step back with him in the game, but maybe not as much as people were saying to start the year.
Well, right. I think that's kind of the point, is, and what I was trying to highlight earlier was the fact that McCormick is not as big of a step down as you would have thought he would have been coming into the year. And so, you know, yeah, he's not as dominant as Doak, but when he is in the game, especially late, you know, if you can essentially replace, you know, the one huge weakness in Doak's game, which is definitely getting better, but the huge weakness in his free throw shooting, and by just taking a small step down in a bunch of other areas that maybe aren't quite as important when you get in late game situations where free throws are so important. Like, you know, McCormick is kind of the perfect big man to have in at the end of the game, especially if Doak has already been in foul trouble. You know, so it definitely gives them a little bit more flexibility, helps them quite a bit in those late game situations. But you're right, he was absolutely phenomenal. You know, in those 20 minutes, he had 16 points. He made 7 of 9 on his two-pointers, which isn't quite as good of a percentage as Doak, but he did take, you know, basically 3 more shots. He took 3 more shots and missed 2 of his total shots, whereas Doak only missed 1. But, you know, he was extremely effective in this game. Like you said, you know, he had the 1 turnover, but he also had an assist. I saw a little bit better interior passing from him than I've seen in previous games, and so I was definitely encouraged by that. I don't think that either McCormick or Sylvia DeSouza are going to be able to show enough this year, just the way that this team is made up, for both of them to be able to go. It is a possibility that both of them could be back next year, and we can have a really, really good down-low tandem between those two. Because, you know, while you can't really see, I think, McCormick playing with Doak at the same time, I do think that McCormick and Silvio could potentially be on the floor at the same time, especially after they have some time to build some chemistry. So, all right. Anyone else in this particular game that you wanted to highlight, whether it's a KU player or a BYU player?
Well, I think, you know, other than maybe TJ Haas's horrific hair, if you want to get into that. But other than that, no, I mean, you know, Jake Toulson was a guy who, I mean, just briefly, he was a guy who transferred, grant transfer from Utah Valley, who was on my list of, you know, maybe guys that Kansas should take a look at. And he's had a nice year, you know, shooting the three. I think he would look good, but not a great game against Kansas. So maybe just one of those guys who maybe doesn't quite have the athleticism to play against like a Power 5 schedule. So that was kind of the only thing that stood out to me just from having, you know, talked about him a little bit in the summer.
Yeah, the one BYU player that jumped out to me was Colby Lee. He was definitely overmatched by Doak most of the night. He ended up with 4 fouls, and so he wasn't as effective as he could have been. But, you know, he was still able to get 13 points on 5 of 6 shooting. He did make a 3, you know, and he had a few rebounds, had a couple turnovers, but overall had a very solid game. I thought he stood up to Doak a lot better than I expected him to. But obviously, it's hard for really anybody to stand up to Doak, especially when you're giving up, you know, a good 3-4 inches to him. So, you know, I thought it was a good overall effort from BYU. They were a lot colder from 3 than we feared that they were going to be, and that really was a difference in the game. All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the Dayton game. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so let's turn our attention to the Dayton game. You did promise we were going to be talking about Dotson and Abaji in this game. Obviously, I think the star of this particular game would be Devon Dotson. He was the KenPom MVP. And while Doak got 29 points as well, you know, and they fed him in there basically all game long, I do think that Devon Dotson really showed why he is so valuable for this team and why he's the perfect kind of point guard that they have for this team. He did have quite a few turnovers. Are you a little worried about that? He ended up with 6 turnovers in this game, but had kind of 5 steals to balance it out a little bit. Overall, what were your thoughts on Dotson, and what do you think this kind of tells us for him moving forward?
Yeah, so, well, I guess first things first, I actually thought Azubuike probably was your MVP of that game, KenPom aside. But, yeah, Dotson specifically, I mean, I sent this out in a tweet. I think it was right after the game. Maybe it's time we let go of the idea that he's going to be this like high assist, low turnover point guard. That doesn't really seem to be his game. He's not a great passer, although I think he, you know, probably quote unquote should have gotten more assists than he did, just because some of those were pretty good dump ins to the post, whereas Buki, you know, maybe took a while and did a couple of moves to score, and you don't always get credit for those assists. But yeah, the turnovers, I mean, he tries to make a lot of plays in the open floor that, you know, maybe he shouldn't. Not a great ball handler on the pick and roll yet. I think that's probably going to come as he just gets, you know, more and more reps with it. But yeah, he's probably not ever going to be like a high assist, low turnover guy. But like I said, I mean, if you can go, you know, 10 of 14 and then go to the line, 10 times, I'm not really too worried about it. I'd much rather have that than a guy who's going to, you know, put up four shots, but also, you know, eight assists and two turnovers or something like that. And good point by you that, you know, those five steals, you know, do kind of, in a way, cancel out those turnovers. And a couple of them happened, like, you know, 2 seconds after he turned the ball over. So those especially cancel out those turnovers.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think coming into this year, I think a lot of people were seeing this team, while the overall talent, I think, was better. I got the impression that a lot of KU fans were seeing this team like the year that it was Sharon Collins and Cole Aldridge coming back, you know, as the two main leaders of the team, where they thought the guy, you know, Devon Dotson was essentially your Sharon Collins and Doak would be your Cole Aldridge in this case, where, you know, you have a very good big man, a very good point guard leading the charge for everyone else, and then everyone else is kind of just filling in around them. I'm not, especially after this game, I'm not really seeing it that way. Well, yes, Devon Dotson is probably one of our better perimeter scorers. Like you said, I don't think he's quite the facilitator that Collins was, and I don't think that really is his game style. He is definitely much more of a slashing, scoring type of point guard than a guy that's going to pass it around and really find those guys. Garrett kind of fills in the role, which is a little weird to say. He fills in, I think, the role of kind of the calming leadership, you know, facilitator type presence, which is a little weird just because he doesn't have really the stats to necessarily back that up, but that's kind of the feel that I get from him when he's on the court. So, you know, this particular team, though, like, do we have clearly defined roles for a lot of these players at this point, do you think?
Well, it does seem very, 2009 basketball that it's somewhat positionless. Obviously, you know, Dotson is kind of locked in as your primary ball handler and you know, Azubuki is locked in as your big man. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the perimeter stuff is pretty interchangeable. I mean, even guys who you would think have more defined roles, like an Isaiah Moss coming off the bench to shoot threes. I mean, he's, you know, getting into the slasher role a little bit, and he's, you know, a little bit more of a passer than I thought he would be. And, you know, Ochai Agbaji has been a little bit more of a kind of a well-rounded guy than I thought he would be. I mean, I thought he'd be more of a jump shooter than anything. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of, you know, versatility on the floor, I think. But as far as, you know, Dotson is, I think, your leader by example type. I think Azubuki is kind of the, you know, if you need a basket, you're gonna dump it inside to him. And then I think you're right. I mean, Marcus Garrett, you know, fills in a lot of those holes as far as, you know, leadership, and I think he's, you know, honestly, probably the best passer on the team. And obviously, you know, that guy who, I mean, you go look at, you know, the other team's best player, and, you know, I don't know what Bill Self's going to do in a couple of years, because right now it's basically just, okay, Marcus, you got him type deal. And that covers up a lot of sins on defense. So, but yeah, other than that, I mean, I think you got those kind of big three guys, and then you've got kind of, you know, everyone else filling in around them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little weird because I don't think that – well, and the thing that really kind of is weird for me is Isaiah Moss, because you're right. He was expected to kind of be the sharp shooter from three. But in these last two games, he hasn't really filled that role. You know, he's only taken – and part of this might just be in terms of, you know, the overall game plan, trying to dump it inside so often. But, you know, in the last two games, he only took six perimeter shots, and that was it. You know, like, he took five against BYU and only made one of them, so he didn't really kind of live up to, you know, his really good three-point shooter percentage-wise name. But he only took one shot against Dayton, and I don't know how – I wasn't really tracking him for most of the game, and I haven't got a chance to really go back and rewatch it. I don't know if that was Dayton was really putting guys out on him to keep him from shooting, and so he passed it off. But that was the only possession that was used by him, you know, for the entire night, and he played 36 minutes, so he put in a lot of time to not really do anything offensively. That's the kind of line that we saw for Marcus Garrett last year, you know, where he put in pretty much all the minutes and then didn't really take any shots. And, you know, that was a huge problem for them offensively last year. I don't think that he's going to get to that same point, but are you a little worried maybe that they don't have that guy that can be the three-point sharpshooter like Moss was supposed to be, or is it just a couple of weird games that made it maybe look like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, eventually he's going to, you know, shoot the ball a lot better and hopefully a lot more than he has been. I mean, you're right that they're, you know, certainly force-feeding the ball in the post. I mean, you know, sample size be damned. I mean, he's shooting the ball 40% from three, so it's not like I'm worried or anything. I think he's going to probably shoot a little bit more than he has been. And, you know, he's a career, like, 40-ish percent three-point shooter. So, I do think he's probably not a guy that you want to, like, build your offense around. He's not a great ball handler. Like, he's an okay ball handler. He's an okay passer. All that stuff, you know, probably flies at Iowa, which is kind of a mid-tier Big Ten team. But, you know, at Kansas, you kind of want to just stand there and shoot the ball. And so maybe he's adjusting to that a little bit. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you can't really play 36 or whatever it was minutes and take one shot. I mean, that's something that you can't really do. I don't even care if you're, you know, Marcus Garrett level offensive ability wise, you just can't do that. And he's I don't think he's as bad defensively as people have made it out to be. He's got some pretty bad highlights on film where he's getting crossed over and stuff, but overall I think he's been okay to a little bit better than okay. But you know, you have to be basically Marcus Garrett level on defense if you're going to put up one shot in 36 minutes. So that part, you know,
yeah.
I think it'd be nice on Saturday when they play Colorado if they'd maybe run some plays for him just to get him some shots and stuff like that, just to get him in the flow of the offense. Because yeah, you can't really have a zero out there on the wing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and anyone else from this game that you wanted to highlight?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's talk Udoka Azubuike, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I thought he was the MVP. Dayton down the stretch had to switch Obi Toppin off him because they didn't want him to foul out. I mean, he committed four fouls. I think all four of them were on Azubuike, if I remember. Oh, no, three of them were on Azubuike, I believe. So not only is he, you know, 12 of 15 from two, basically doing everything in the overtime period. Not only is he, you know, getting four blocks on the defensive end, he's basically occupying and not only almost fouling out Dayton's best player, but also just, you know, occupying him on defense. And whenever he is on Azubuike, I mean, that just saps all his energy. And it's a testament to him that he still had, you know, the game that he did, 18 points and 9 rebounds and 3 blocks. I mean, he just had a, you know, insane game and probably, you know, maybe should have been the Maui MVP, even with Dayton not winning and even with Dotson and Azubuike playing as well as they did. Cause, I mean, he was incredible.
Was fantastic.
Yeah. He's going to be the best player that Kansas plays all year. I don't care if they go, you know, all the way to the championship game. So, they survived that. So, I mean, that makes me a lot more optimistic going forward, but that's another story for another day, I guess. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, Azubuike was, you know, occupying him so much and still scoring. I mean, it would be enough if he would have almost fouled him out, but just the fact that he was able to score over and over and over again, just an incredible game by him. And he's this, like, you know, singular weapon, I think, in college basketball where no one else is just an automatic bucket like he is, where if he gets 2 feet in the paint, it's over. So that's something that I think, you know, getting back to our earlier conversation, just keep doing it. I mean, three-pointers are three-pointers, but if you're going to score, you know, 75% of the time you get the ball inside the paint, I don't know why you wouldn't do it basically every possession as long as you can, you know, stand upright.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's going to kind of be the key, is to find the right balance there. And it's going to change depending on the opponent. But you're right. Like, Udoka Azubuike is going to be one of the main weapons for this team. And the question is always, you know, where do you take the trade-off of his almost certain 2 points every time that he gets it down low with a little bit of space to work versus the needing those extra threes to keep up with someone who's extremely hot. So the hotter the opponent is from three, you know, the more you kind of need to take a little bit of a gamble and shoot more from three. But Bill Self obviously has a very tough job trying to find that right balance and really varying it based off of the actual situation. All right, I do want to go ahead and look ahead to the Colorado game just briefly. We are actually going to have another episode coming out tomorrow on Friday. That's actually talking with the Colorado guys so that we can get that preview from them. But I do want to look at it from a Kansas standpoint. We'll do that when we get back. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so talking just a little bit about this Colorado game. I don't know if you've done a full prep for them yet in terms of scouting. I know you usually do the previews there. I'm not sure where you are with that for that. But taking a look at what you've seen from Colorado, they've jumped up to number 20 in the AP poll. You know, KenPom has them at 30th. But still, this is a very quality Colorado team coming to Allen Fieldhouse on Saturday. What is it that you've seen so far from Colorado, whether it's just scouting them on KenPom or actually watching some of their play?
Yeah, have watched not a lot. I mean, they played Clemson in the ACC. Oh, no, they're not in the Big Ten. They played Clemson. I don't know why it was.
Right.
I guess I don't know why it was. But anyway, I did watch a little bit of that game, and they just barely beat them. Other than that, I mean, so they haven't played the top 50 KenPom team yet. I think, you know, stylistically, one thing that does jump out at me is they're kind of a KU, I don't want to say dream opponent, because I do think they're good, but just like style of play, you know, they don't shoot a lot of threes, which is nice. They're also not good at shooting twos, and they've played a lot of kind of bad teams, so that's making me a little bit, you know, worried that they're maybe not as good as the AP poll or even KenPom says they are. They do shoot threes pretty well. I don't know why they don't shoot more threes, but hopefully they keep that up. One thing, though, is their defense has been really good. No one can get an offensive rebound against them. They're turning teams over a lot, so that's going to be, you know, a challenge for Kansas, who, like I said, has been a little bit better in that area lately. But, you know, certainly, you know, you look at that Duke game and worry if that's coming back. Fourth best two-point defense in the country. Teams are only shooting 36% from two against them, which is really impressive. But I kind of tend to think when they have a schedule like Colorado has, that that's maybe a little bit more due to opponent versus talent, which hopefully I don't get, you know, yelled at. Although, you know, given recent legal recreational substance laws and stuff, I think maybe Colorado fans are too chill to come yell at me, so that's nice. But you know, I think it's probably a little bit more of an issue with you know, the schedule they played versus, you know, how good they are. But who knows? I mean, they certainly could come out and it could be a rock fight. But if it is that type of a game, I mean, I just think I trust Kansas to win like a low scoring defensive battle more so than probably any team in the country, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, that really is what we've seen. You know, Kansas defense has been absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, like you were saying, Colorado's defense is actually a fairly good defense so far. But the question, I think, has to be, I mean, I realize that KenPom adjusts for opponent and things like that, but there's nobody that really jumps out to me as an offensive juggernaut. And, you know, while they do adjust for opponent, there's only so much that adjustment can actually capture. And so that makes me wonder if some of their defensive numbers are inflated a little bit. But like you said, you know, they're really good defensively inside, but I don't think they've faced anyone like Udoka Azubuike. So the real question then becomes, you know, how are they going to handle him? And, you know, is Kansas going to be able to dominate inside like they have been? They do have a 6'10 center in Lucas Seward, who, you know, plays quite a bit. He plays about 50% of their minutes, so he's not, you know, one of their main guys. They also have Dallas Walton, but again, he only plays about 16% of the minutes. So they don't have a lot of guys, big guys inside that play a lot. And so that is something I think where Kansas is definitely going to be able to take advantage of that. The question really then becomes, you know, is Colorado going to be able to do what a lot of teams seem to do against Kansas, which is try to shoot a whole bunch of threes? You know, they do make 37% of their threes so far in the year, but they're only taking about 33% or just under 33% of their shots are threes. So they're very similar to Kansas in that they're not taking nearly as many threes as a proportion of their shots compared to a lot of people. And so their two-point shooting, like, they should be taking a whole lot more because they're not very good shooting from twos. You know, they're only at 43.4% on the year, which is in the 300s in terms of ranking. They're a whole lot better from threes, but they don't seem to take a whole bunch of them. So I'm wondering, you know, how much this is going to be a very defensive game just because of what Kansas likes to do. You know, it'll be more low scoring because I think Kansas likes to take those two-pointers, isn't going to focus more as much on the three-pointers. And, you know, Colorado does not like to take the three-pointers, even though that's what they seem to be good at. So I'm definitely going to be asking about that. You know, we'll get some more insight when I talk to the Colorado guys about that. But it just seems like maybe this team is not really focusing on the things that would make them successful. And so maybe they're going to have a little bit of an adjustment one way or another. Either they're going to do things that seem to fit with their team profile a little bit better, or their numbers are going to start coming back down as maybe they run out a little bit of the luck in terms of how they're actually performing.
Yeah,
all right.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, you know, Tyler Bay, who is compared to Obi Toppin, is going to look like he absolutely sucks, but he's, you know, fifth right now in the KenPom Player of the Year standings, off to a really nice start this year. I think he might pose a little bit of an issue for, you know, Marcus Garrett's probably going to guard him. He's 6'7". He can shoot the ball from the outside, but it's a lot more of like an inside, you know, slasher type. Seventh in the country at drawing fouls, so he's probably going to be a guy that, you know, Udoka Azubuike, hopefully he stays away from him and doesn't foul him, because I think, you know, Azubuike, if he gets in foul trouble and has to come off the court, then, you know, we maybe start getting into some issues with, you know, maybe Colorado keeping it a little bit closer than you should. But he's definitely a player to watch. He's really good. He's, you know, kind of a do-everything type guy, similar to Obi Toppin. Just maybe, you know, a poor man's Obi Toppin is kind of an insult and probably undersells how good he's been. But, I mean, I think just more goes to show how good Toppin is, that Tyler Bay can be fifth in the KenPom Player of the Year standings. I'm sitting here looking at him like, ah, you know, that's nothing compared to what we've just seen.
Yeah, I find it kind of weird that Obi Toppin is not in the KenPom Player of the Year standings at all, which is a little weird for me. But I think, like you're saying, you know, he definitely seems to be one of the better players in the nation at this point, and I think he'll work his way up there eventually. It's just a matter of how long that's actually going to take. So, all right, we will go ahead and leave it there. Did you have a random sports minute for us?
You know, I don't really. Congrats to, for the third week in a row, we'll do a CFL one. Congrats to Winnipeg, for winning the, Canadian Football League Championship. And congrats to me for successfully predicting that Winnipeg would win the CFL Championship.
Yes, definitely. All right. Well, we don't really have much more to break down, and that gets us dangerously close to Kansas football, which I don't really want to talk about right at the moment. So
yeah, I'm out of here.
Yeah, facts. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you can get your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of the other million other apps that are out there. Subscribe to us there so you get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can, please do give us a rating and a review. 5 stars, nice comments would be great. But if for some reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring this to you guys so you can get the information in an entertaining fashion. You know, so that you can get everything that you need there. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, anything in terms of like you want to try to interview specific people or anything like that, do send them our way. You can email me at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. You can contact me on Twitter at rockchalkpod. And of course, you can always contact Fetch over at the Rock Chalk Talk Twitter as well. But we will go ahead and leave it there. Once again, thanks, Fetch, for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.